Thanks for inviting me into your home. Long-haul truck, RV, camper, taxi, your parents' well-appointed rec room, your loft, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, and your cabin in the woods. Welcome to Coast AM, the best in late-night radio. I'm Richard Serrett, and tonight, this morning, we're coming to you live from Coast's Toronto affiliate, In-Depth Radio, News Talk 1010. It was 50 years ago, this coming summer, when the Paul is Dead legend was born. A Midwestern college campus newspaper published a story claiming that Paul McCartney had been killed in a car crash in 1966 and secretly replaced with a lookalike by record execs in order to preserve record sales. The surviving Beatles, so the story goes, presumably were so guilt-ridden that they had perpetrated such a hoax, they proceeded to leave a trail of breadcrumbs, clues, revealing the truth. My guest in Hour 1, writer-filmmaker Andrew Arnett, will be here to discuss his theory that occultist magician Aleister Crowley, whose picture is featured prominently on the cover of the Beatles' magnum opus Sgt. Pepper's, was in fact behind the entire Paul is Dead hoax. He'll be here in moments to explain. In Hours 2, 3, and 4, Coast to Coast AM has never feared to tackle controversial issues head on. And tonight, we'll go where few programs, quite frankly, are willing to go, deep into the vaccine debate. You're going to hear, or you're going to take part, rather, in a conversation that can get you deplatformed, kicked off social media for even suggesting that there might be an association between vaccines and neurological disorders, such as autism. The science is settled, and to suggest otherwise is tantamount to a thought crime. Well, we're now living in a time where pediatricians are firing their patients if they refuse to get vaccinated. Municipal and state governments have enacted legislation or are considering legislation to make vaccinations mandatory, full stop. Then along comes Forrest Merriti, a blogger, researcher, and author of a book called The Autism Vaccine, The Story of Modern Medicine's Greatest Tragedy. The book was the subject of an online petition to have it banned from Amazon. But the petition to make the autism vaccine available on Amazon won out, at least for now. Forrest Merriti is not a doctor. He's not an immunologist. He's not even a scientist. But he has compiled a pretty comprehensive history of the development of vaccines, such as the diphtheria vaccine, and how the introduction of aluminum hydroxide into vaccines in the early 1930s corresponds with an outbreak of autism in the very two countries that introduced the aluminum-laced vaccine. Was the great beast Aleister Crowley behind the Paul is Dead hoax? That conversation is next. Welcome to the Audio Imaginarium. Come on in, weary traveler, hang your cloak on a peg. Grab a stool and come gather around the fire. There are stories to be told, and you are among friends. I'm Richard Serrett. This is Coast to Coast AM. Why don't you stay a while? Bear with me as I crib from the opening paragraph of Andrew Arnett's article in Paranoia magazine. Aleister Crowley's penchant for photobombing the world's greatest conspiracies has been discussed by us in previous articles, but in the present case, the analogy can be taken quite literally. Crowley's mug is planted squarely on the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band album cover, arguably the most iconic image in pop culture. Our present focus relates to Crowley's involvement in the Paul is Dead conspiracy, and more generally, the Beatles as a whole. The Fab Four are the cornerstone of modern-day pop culture, which for some makes them inextricably linked with nefarious workings of the establishment. As we shall find, Mr. Crowley has managed to worm his way into the center of this alleged rotten apple. But as is the case with all things conspiracy, a vast gulf lies between what is real and what is indulgent fantasy of the tinfoil-hatted community. Today, 50 years after the death hoax started, McCartney is back on top of the charts. His newly released album, Egypt Station, went straight to number one on the Billboard 200, and he's embarking on a worldwide tour. Rumors of his premature demise are also back in full swing. Numerous books, YouTube videos, and blogs pay slavish devotion to analyzing every detail of the conspiracy, sensing something sinister lurking behind the cute beetle. Maybe that sinister something has a name. Aleister Crowley. Crowley was a British poet, painter, novelist, occultist, and prophet of the new eon. He died shortly after any of the Beatles were born. So how could the wickedest man in the world be pulling the strings of the world's greatest band? Andrew Arnett is a writer, filmmaker, and musician. His writing covers the paranormal, drug wars, art, and travel. He's been published in Paranoia Magazine, Feral House, Konbini, Nexus Magazine, and the Baltimore Sun. He lives in Brooklyn, New York, and hunts ghosts with the Brooklyn Paranormal Society. Andrew Arnett, welcome to Coast to Coast. Nice to meet you.
Great to be here, Richard. I'm so excited to be on this iconic show and very honored that you asked me to appear with you here.
You know what's interesting, Andrew, is just over a week and a half ago, Russ Gibb, who was the DJ at WKNR in Detroit, he passed away at the age of 87. And he's sort of, in a way, sort of ground zero for where this whole hoax began, or this legend, if you will, because there are some who sincerely believe that Paul McCartney, in fact, died and was replaced by a double. But let's just go back to October of 69. One of the things that's fascinating to me is how, prior to the age of the internet, a legend like this could take root and then continue to thrive and thrive and thrive 50 years on. Let's go back to October 69. How did it get started?
Well, the college semester, the college year was just beginning. It was summer. The students were gathering. And, there was a lot of student activism, and the music was a very big part of culture, youth culture at that time. But dropped in the middle of that mix was this rumor that, you know, Paul McCartney had died. Basically, he was killed in a car crash on the M1 motorway on September 11th, 1966, and then was replaced by a double. And the curious thing is that there seemed to have been clues planted all over Beatles albums and in Beatles songs, especially starting with the Sgt. Pepper album Onwards. And what happened was that the first article that was published on the matter, it was published in Des Moines Straits Times Delphic on September 17th, 1969. And it was called, "Is Beatles Paul McCartney Dead?" And, you know, they would put in some of the clues and things, such as playing the record backwards, as on Revolution Number 9, hearing allegedly a voice saying, "Turn me on, dead man." And then there were a lot of these clues. So there were these Easter eggs. And in this environment, in this campus environment, it started spreading, and it went from coast to coast. And that's basically where it began.
Right. And I mentioned Russ Gibbs' role in this, the DJ that just passed away. Someone, a student, called into his station at WKNR and announced this, and it just took root. And I guess it's been given, you know, greater currency, as we'll get into here, because Paul McCartney has a new album out called Egypt Station, and we'll talk about some of the symbolism on that album and some of the motifs in that album. But he's back on top with a number one album the first time since 1982. It's quite a remarkable feat for a man who's closer to 80 than he is 70. However, let's go back to 67, because, you know, this album cover is really seen as just a feast of of Paul is Dead clues, and it is sort of depicted as a funeral scene. But we see, of course, Aleister Crowley's face very prominently placed on the album. The question is, how could Aleister Crowley have orchestrated this Paul is Dead legend when he'd already been dead for 20 years?
That's absolutely true. It is a curious thing, and it's a fascinating thing. This is one of the strangest stories you could come across. And, you know, I'm an avid fan of conspiracies, and I've been following them for, you know, most of my life. The weird thing about this is that it's such an intimate thing. It really hits close to home because so many people are Beatles fans. And I began I became a fan of the Beatles. I guess I was 11 and in sixth grade. And my friend Richard said, hey, check out this band. Next thing, we're collecting the records. We're collecting the American records and the British ones, the German ones. We really got into it. And it wasn't long after that, Richard said, hey, look, Andrew, check out this. And he starts showing me some of these clues. So this goes way back. And the curious thing is, yes, Aleister Crowley, he's there on the cover. And he's just like one face amongst many others. But if you fold the album in half, suddenly his face is actually on the top. And the way it folds is, I mean, he's the most prominent. And so the question is, how do, you know, what role does he play? But yes, the album cover undoubtedly presents a funeral ceremony. And just to touch on some of the basic ones, for instance, there is a grave with red flowers that spell out the Beatles, and that's quite obvious for all to see. The Beatles, as we knew them, they're no longer. They died. This is symbolic that they died with the death of Paul. See, this is the message that's being portrayed. There is an arrangement of yellow flowers, and it's distinctly in the shape of a left-handed bass guitar. There are three strings, and the fact that there's one bass string missing denotes that, hey, there is a Beatle missing. There are other clues which indicate that, you know, Paul is dead. For instance, he's on the cover. The three other band members are holding brass instruments, but he's holding a black woodwind instrument, the cor anglais. Some would interpret that as a death symbol. And, of course, one of the most prominent is that on the bass drum head, where it says Lonely Hearts, well, if you, you know, slide a mirror, right, halfway through that, it reads 11-9, then he die, with an arrow pointing up to Paul. And, you know, an alleged reference to McCartney dying on November 9, 1966, as the average American would interpret it. But a correction here would be that it's because it's British, the British actually read the day first, the month second, and the year following that. So really, if this is true, then they're trying to indicate that Paul McCartney died on September 11th, 1966, which is, you know, the date in itself is kind of weird and symbolic. And there are other things involved in that. Now, you know, I've been researching this, and I'm looking into it more and more. And I've come across recently some new clues, which they're kind of really amazing. I'll give you an example. For instance, now in a book by Thomas Uriatt, called Memoirs of Billy Shears. Well, there's a hand over McCartney's head, and that's often been indicated as to sort of representing a priest blessing, you know, the dead Beatle Paul. But in this book, he suggests that perhaps there's even more to it than that. And he's saying that the palm is sort of, if you spell it, you could spell it as Paul M. So it's like palm is Paul M, Paul McCartney. And so that's an indication that this replacement here is playing the part of Paul McCartney. And there are other palm symbolism. For instance, to the left of the album cover, there's actually a palm tree. But the most, like, I would say in my research, a rarely spoken of Paul is dead clue, and this, in my opinion, has to be the smoking gun, literally and figuratively, that they're putting forward some kind of message here. And coincidentally, there's a Stanley Kubrick connection. This clue didn't come out until more recently, when rare behind-the-scenes production photos of the Sgt. Pepper session were released to the public. In these photos, we discover there is a cardboard cutout of a man holding a rifle. But this image is obscured by George Harrison on the album cover. And so we can only see it in the photos that were released recently. And you can just look this up on the internet. Now, this figure has been identified as Timothy Carey, who is an American film and television actor. It was taken from a 1956 Stanley Kubrick film called The Killing. And Carey's character is holding and aiming a rifle, looking as if he's about to shoot. In the movie, Carey's character is a killer who is part of a group of criminals planning to heist the bankroll of a racetrack. And in this particular scene, Carey's character is about to shoot the lead racehorse in the race. Now, on the cover of the album, as I said, George is standing in front of the cardboard cutout of the actor, but as we can see in the photos, Paul is standing next to George, and he's actually standing right in front of the barrel of the gun, which is pointed directly at his heart. And when I saw that, I'm like, wow, this is pretty amazing. The question is, what does it all mean?
Exactly.
And that's what we're exploring tonight.
Right. And getting back to Aleister Crowley, I mean, this is perhaps, you know, one of the most nefarious figures, sinister figures in the 19th and 20th century. He was an occultist, but he was many more things, of course. He was a poet and a magician. He practiced a system of magic, you know, with a K, magic spelled with a K.
Mm-hmm.
But you suggest that when the Beatles were singing "It Was 20 Years Ago Today," that Sgt. Pepper taught the band to play, they were really referring to Aleister Crowley, because the release of Sgt. Pepper coincided with the 20th anniversary of his death, correct?
That's correct. He died in 1947.
And the idea that the Beatles were so interested in Crowley and were devotees of Crowley, let's just talk a little bit about that. We've got a couple minutes before we head into the break, and then we'll continue after. But how do we know that the Beatles were so enamored of this occultist, Aleister Crowley?
Well, Crowley, you know, he's a very interesting character. And as time goes on, we discover more and more about that guy. And more recently, researchers have uncovered that perhaps he was a British secret agent, on top of, you know, his long resume, dubious resume at that. But now, let's see here. What
Well, the very name of the name of the Beatles, the fact that they called themselves the Beatles, we should start there because that sort of leads back to Crowley, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. See, I'm just like, what? You know, how do you come in on this angle? See, the thing with Crowley is he's very mysterious, and for some reason he pops up in a lot of conspiracies, you know, music related or not, which I've come across. But definitely in the world of rock and roll, he's like
all right,
a major figure.
Absolutely. Andrew, I'm going to just jump in here. We'll take a quick time out, come back, and continue to delve into Aleister Crowley's influence on the Beatles. Was he behind the Paul is Dead hoax? Right here on Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us. Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett coming to you from Coast Toronto affiliate In-Depth Radio, News Talk 1010. Andrew Arnett is with us, writer, filmmaker, recently penned an article for Paranoia Magazine about Aleister Crowley and the Beatles and how Crowley may have been behind the Paul is Dead legend. Just talk to me for a moment, if you could, Andrew, about the name of the Beatles and how that is connected to Crowley, because we always sort of thought, according to Lennon, the name the Beatles was a nod to Buddy Holly and the Crickets, the cricket and an insect, and so the Beatles, also an insect. How does it connect back to Crowley?
Yeah, well, you see, it seems as if Crowley was a big influence on the Beatles right at the inception of the band, or at least the naming of the band. So that's a curious thing. Now, what, you know, the Beatles have explained how they've come up with the name as, for instance, a nod to Buddy Holly and the Crickets. On another occasion, John stated, it came in a vision. A man appeared on a flaming pie and said unto them, from this day on, you are Beatles, with an A. But researchers have been looking into this, and they're saying, you know what? It looks as if, here's another nod to Crowley, because in 1910, Crowley published a book of poems called The Winged Beetle, which includes occult-themed poems. And they note also that Paul, after the breakup of the Beatles, of course, went on to form the band Wings. Are the Beatles acolytes of Crowley's system of magic? You see, that's the curiosity here. And a lot of, you know, a lot of rock and roll bands profess openly that they are disciples of Crowley. But the Beatles, you know, they had a different image. And it was a squeaky clean image. Of course, you know, they went through metamorphoses and stuff. But it's very significant because the Beatles are the world's biggest band. They've sold more than anything else, and they have, you know, the highest, grandest platform. So, but what does it all mean? Well, the thing is, again, it seems to seep into every aspect of what the Beatles had done.
Let's talk about Crowley's magic in theory and practice, because he instructed, you know, his devotees and what he called the adept to engage in certain practices, which seems to mirror what the Beatles were doing in the recording studio.
That's right. Now, 66 was, you know, they made a lot of breakthroughs. And one of those things was backmasking, which is a recording technique where a sound or a message is recorded backwards and played forward. And the first time it was done was in 66 by the Beatles. Now, if you look into Magic in Theory and Practice, which is a book written by Crowley, he instructs his adepts to, A, let him learn to write backwards with either hand. Then let him learn to walk backwards. Also, let him constantly watch, if convenient, cinematography films, listen to phonograph records in reverse, learn to speak backwards. And he also says, coincidentally, thus, for instance, I am he, let him say, a, ma, I. And, you know, that right there, that line, I am he, is the opening line to I am the walrus. So it opens up a lot. And that's just in music. Crowley, he struck me as his whole lifestyle seemed to, you could say, he was, let's just say, he's like the first rock star, because, I mean, he did everything that, you know, latter-day rock stars did. He was a drug addict, and he indulged in heroin, cocaine, psychedelics, and then he was a very libertine guy. He had very liberal views on sexuality, and there's something about that philosophy that influenced the Beatles. For instance,
Well, he was certainly famous for this whole idea, this credo, which certainly infiltrated rock, and that was, you know, do what thou wilt. That's the whole of the law. In other words, do what feels good, as long as it doesn't hurt anybody else. And certainly the Beatles and other musicians, Led Zeppelin, the Rolling Stones, they certainly lived up to that. But let's just get back to the name of the Beatle for a moment and talk to me about the significance of the Beatle in terms of Egyptian mythology.
Yes. Well, you see, I think that's where his influence was most profound, you know, the message he was getting out there. But yes, in regards to the philosophy, I mean, Crowley's core, let's say, mantra was, do what thou wilt is the whole of the law, and love is the law, love under will. And I just want to point out here that, like, John Lennon, in an interview with Playboy, he was quoted as saying, the whole Beatle idea was to do what you want, right? To take your own responsibility, do what you want, and try not to harm other people, right? Do what thou wilt, as long as it doesn't hurt somebody, end quote. And so, you know, there seems to be a real, well, you know, a very close statement to what Crowley said. But I think the influence, and really the whole Paul is dead thing, and it's a weird thing because so many people here are in the conspiracy world really are asserting that there are two Paul McCartneys, the one that lived up to 66 and then the one that replaced him afterwards. And they go to great lengths to prove that this is the case. But I think that a realistic view is that, yes, there is something going on here. There's the Paul is dead concept is real in the sense that it was perpetrated by the Beatles, but not necessarily that there are two Paul McCartneys. And I think that it ties in with Egyptian mythology, and this is the big thing with Crowley. His whole system of magic could be related back to ancient Egyptian mystery schools and things of that nature. So getting back to that, really, what we're looking at here is I came across the concept of the scarab beetle, which is an insect. It's a small insect, and it's associated with Egyptian gods by its curious habit of rolling dung from east to west into a ball into which it lays its eggs. And when hatched, the dung provides its young with food. And in this concept is a metaphor for initiation, and for the Egyptians, it's initiation into the Egyptian mysteries. So this Paul's dead thing should be, I'm looking at it as a interpreted symbolically as an initiation. Now,
in other words, Paul's symbolic death, not an actual physical death, where he was actually replaced by a body double, but because they're devotees of Crowley, they are partaking in this Egyptian mystery school, this idea of a symbolic death, where Paul dies symbolically but arises again. Is that the idea?
Yeah, I think that's the big influence here. See, according to Manly Palmer Hall, the initiates of the Egyptian mysteries were sometimes referred to as scarabs or beetles. You know, the scarab, the beetle, according to them, is the emissary of the sun, symbolizing light, truth, regeneration. It is the king of the insect world. It symbolizes the lord of the sun. It's also related to the Egyptian god Ra, which is the most, you know, important god. In fact, Ra is often depicted with a beetle head in his form as a god named Kepera. So, synchronistically, if not consciously, you know, the beetles have somehow embodied that, being the center sun of the musical universe. It leads to a lot of other symbols. For instance, let's take Yellow Submarine, for instance. Here we have four beetles riding in a yellow submarine. Now, Kepra, the beetle-headed aspect of Ra, is often symbolized riding through the sea of the sky in a wonderful ship called the Boat of the Sun. And so when you look at it through this Crowleyan Egyptian prisms, suddenly this concept makes sense. The four beetles, they're riding in a yellow, sun-colored vehicle, and they're floating through this sea, which is the sky. And as I said, it represents initiation and a rebirth, because in the case of a real dung beetle, it rolls this ball and then it lays its eggs inside of it, and when they hatch, they feed on the dung. And so it's a process of transforming the dead matter of dung into renewed life, which represents initiation for Egyptian mysteries. So Paul's death, rather than being literal, should be interpreted as a symbolic initiation.
And then he's reborn as he forms his new band, Wings. And as you pointed out, he is then the winged beetle, which is the name of one of Crowley's poems. But you also point out in your article in Paranoia Magazine that the Beatles actually were dropping clues long before Sergeant Pepper, even before Revolver in 66, which was very experimental. You point to the album cover for Help, where they appear to be spelling out the name Help in semaphore with flags. Talk to me about that.
Yes. Let me get right to that. But since I just want to mention one more thing regarding the Egyptian thing. And the Egyptians have this book. It's called the Egyptian Book of the Dead. And there's a much emphasis placed on the beetle in that book. For instance, there's a passage from that book. It says, "And behold, thou shalt make a scarab of green stone, which shall be placed in the heart of a man, and it shall perform for him the opening of the mouth." So the stone scarab is it's also called a heart scarab. It's a small stone thing, and it's placed in the heart cavity of the dead person during the embalming and mummification process. A lot of our funeral rites throughout many cultures and nations borrow a lot from this Egyptian thing. But let us consider the last song on the Revolver album, which is the last last thing that the original Paul put out before his alleged death, because it came out in August of 1966. And that song is Tomorrow Never Knows. Now, it's credited to Lennon and McCartney, but basically John wrote most of that song. And when he wrote that song, Lennon drew a lot of inspiration from drugs like LSD, but also from the book The Psychedelic Experience, which is a manual based on the Tibetan Book of the Dead, written by Timothy Leary, Richard Alpert. And it lends a lot to that. But let's get back. That's right. And I think that when you go back as early as 65 with the Help album, you're seeing clues already, which I think indicates that they're preparing for this this initiation. Now, on that album, you see the Beatles. They're in this position. They have these hand motions. It's called semaphore, which is
right. They're holding flags. They're holding flags. Supposedly, they're spelling out something.
That's right. Now, the photographer for that session, a gentleman named Robert Freeman, he explained that, quote, I had the idea of semaphore spelling out the letters help. But when we came to do the shot, the arrangement of the arms with those letters did not look good. So we decided to improvise and ended up with the best graphic position of the arms. And I looked into that, and when I matched up the meanings, basically it spelled out N-U-J-V, which, you know, is gibberish. But some researchers have found something else. They correlated it with a book by Crowley called Liber O Vel Manus et Sagittae Sub Figaro 6. I think I got most of that right. But in it, he lays out some ritual magic. And there are pictures depicting these different positions. And in regards to this, if you match the positions of the Beatles on the cover with the images in this picture, suddenly you're seeing they're transmitting Egyptian mystery messages. For instance, Ringo's spells out Osiris Risen, which is, you know, the initiation, the rebirth. So, yeah, this is how deep it goes, and it's a very strange mystery.
Right, and now it would appear with Egypt Station, McCartney's latest solo album, he has sort of come full circle and maybe overtly acknowledging, his debt to Crowley and really playing up this whole, Egyptian mystery school. Listen, Andrew, been a real pleasure, and this is a fascinating read, and people can find out more about this Paranoia magazine, and the article is, again, entitled, 50 Years Ago, Was Crowley Behind the Paul is Dead Hoax? Thanks again, Andrew. When we come back, the autism vaccine, the story of modern medicine's greatest tragedy. Forrest Merriti, my guest. Stay with us right here on Coast to Coast AM.